The following recording was produced by Christ Redeemer Church of Hanover, New Hampshire. The speaker is Kevin Schwartz. You may find more information on the church and its various resources on the web at www.christredeemerchurch.org.
If you have a Bible, we're going to be in Matthew chapter 2 this morning. The passage is also printed in the bulletin for you. And I would like to read just by reading, begin by reading Matthew 2, verses 1 through 12. Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. And they told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word, that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. And then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. This is the word of the Lord. So I thought it would be nice to continue in the Christmas spirit a little bit here with the story of the visit of the wise men, or the Magi, which many of you are likely familiar with. And at the beginning, if you flip back to the beginning of your bulletin on page 3, there's a part of Bob Dylan's song, speaking of Christmas, "The Times, They Are A-Changin'." Part of it is printed there for you. I'm not going to read it right now. But the song first came out in 1964. It was the title track of the album, "The Times They Are A-Changin'." And it's been called the archetypal protest song. Bob Dylan himself actually said that he wanted it to be a big song that kind of carried a purpose and a weight. And he talked about it being written at a time where he saw this relationship between folk music, the folk music culture, which he was a part of. Actually, he notes a strong connection to the civil rights movement that was going on. And he wanted to write this big song that was kind of challenging the standing, prevailing notions of the day to try to capture what was happening politically, culturally, socially, and to put it out there. And it's a song that I think has lasted much longer than many people anticipated it might. You may not have listened to it or much Bob Dylan recently. It's been Christmas, right? Bob Dylan does have a Christmas album. If you need to bring it, Doug has it. You can borrow it and burn it. But the more I got into Matthew chapter 2, our passage this morning, and started really considering what I think is in the background of Matthew 2, what's happening, what we know is happening in the world at that time, the more I started to think that "The Times They Are A-Changin'" might be one of the best Christmas songs there is. We're going to find, I think, as we enter into Matthew chapter 2, we're going to see a world that has a paranoid king. We're going to see a world that's in political craziness and upheaval. A world that is not at rest. A capital city that is not at peace. And I think that Dylan's words could actually be very appropriate back in these times of Herod and the birth of Jesus Christ and the visit of the Magi. As we're coming just a couple days off of Christmas, just a couple days ago, and we're still, as Doug mentioned, recovering, or some people still hopefully enjoying and celebrating the Christmas season, I want to ask a simple question. I want to ask, how do we react to Christmas? What comes after Christmas? What does it stir up in us, and what do we carry with us as we leave this celebration, the annual celebration of Christmas? I think as we come to Matthew chapter 2, we see three different reactions to Christmas, and that's what I want to focus on this morning. We're going to see one reaction, possible reaction of fear. Second is apathy, and the third is joy. Three possible reactions to Christmas: fear, apathy, and joy. First, as we begin the passage, we're introduced to King Herod. He's the king over Judea, and he, we will find, reacts in fear. He's troubled by Christmas. He's troubled by the birth of this child. Take a look back at verse 3. When Herod the king heard that these men had come looking for a new king, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. That word troubled isn't just like Herod was having a bad day. I don't know what the stressors of the kingly life are, on a day-to-day basis, but that's not all that this is talking about. He didn't, have to fire a servant or something like that. But this is actually, here's a bigger definition of that word troubled: mental and spiritual agitation and confusion that can be manifested in outward tumult. This is what's happening inside of Herod when he hears of Christmas, when he hears of the Christ child being born. He's suffering mental and spiritual agitation and confusion that can then become manifested in outward tumult. Herod's not happy. Fear has been struck into his heart because of Christmas. It's a very passive term, meaning Herod has his own issues, and we're going to see those in a minute, but there's something acting from the outside that is causing this. Something is shifting. Something is changing, and I think Herod can feel it, and he doesn't like it. He's troubled by Christmas. What do we know about this King Herod? We know him better, or more popularly, as Herod the Great. He reigned. He was the king in Judea from about 37 BC to about 4 BC, which I know our calendar doesn't quite seem right, but lines up with the birth of Christ and our passage here. Throughout his reign, he started off on a great foot. He was a king who loved, maybe for his own selfish purposes, but he loved to have things built. He oversaw the Temple Mount, part of the temple being rebuilt in Jerusalem, the western wall of the temple in Jerusalem, which actually a large portion of that still stands today, was built under his rule. There was a big port in Caesarea that was built, and he even oversaw some infrastructure things. The water supply in Jerusalem was vastly upgraded during his time. Of course, all of these things mean that there were extra taxes on all of his people who were already paying taxes to Rome and other places. He also liked to lavishly give gifts to other cities to kind of help his own political well-standing. But as Herod neared the end of his life, we see a little bit of a different story, or maybe we see these tendencies coming out a little bit more that led him to these large building things. It seems that there was much more of a reputation, a legacy here that he was holding on to. And as he nears the later end of his reign, we see that paranoia and anxiety really start to set in. I don't know if you're familiar with Josephus, if you've ever heard that name. He was an ancient church historian, and he actually gives us a lot of information about Herod's reign. So these are some of the things that come out about Herod and his reign. It seems that he actually had a secret police force that he would send out kind of to be amongst the people to let him know what the popular feelings toward him were. Kind of an original, I'm forgetting the term here. Approval rating. There we go. That's what I'm looking for. He rolled with an entourage of about 2,000 bodyguards just in case, anything happened. There are stories of him working for the execution of his own family members that he thought wanted to take his power, to usurp his throne. And this wasn't carried out by anybody, but he had put into place, he had brought in a bunch of people from the country, a bunch of people from around Judea, to be killed on the day of his death, to ensure that if nobody was mourning him, they would at least be mourning and nobody would be rejoicing when he died. This is the king that we are meeting here on the pages of Matthew 2. And in fact, if you look after our passage down to verse 16, you see that he also then orders the killing of all children in Bethlehem because of this new king that he has heard is around. Herod is paranoid. He's anxious. He's depressed. He's in fear. He's trembling. And this is Herod's reaction to Christmas. It's one of fear. It's one of terror. But think about it. If this is what he's built up for himself, if this is where he's coming from, all of a sudden these travelers, these magi, these guys he doesn't know, show up in his capital city and saying, hey, we heard there's a new king. We want to come visit him. We brought him some presents. And I don't know a lot about the kingly life, but I do know that kings typically don't have term limits, right? Like, usually you're done with your reign when, by the best of luck, you die in your sleep, right, of natural causes, or you're killed in war or assassinated or whatever. And so this, of course, is not good news to Herod's paranoid, anxious ears, and it puts his heart astir. It gives him fear, and it gives him terror. But as we see, and as I alluded to, Herod isn't going down without a fight. Christmas doesn't change his heart. In fact, it seems to kind of harden it and to entrench it even more in the way that he's already living. He's even more concerned with his legacy. He's even more concerned with his reputation, with his kingdom. And it seems like a very distant world from us. This isn't what we normally think about at Christmas, but I think there are actually a lot of things in Herod's rule here that we can learn about ourselves, about how we react to Christmas. Think about what is actually underneath all of Herod's actions. He's a man who wants power. He wants to be in control. He wants to leave a legacy so he will be remembered. People can, and he did in a sense, part of what he built is still here. We can still see it. But yeah, underneath that, he's anxious and he's paranoid. He wants to be a part of this political maneuvering. And I think when we start to think of it in those terms of seeking power, of seeking control, of wanting to leave a reputation for people to remember us, then all of a sudden it can hit a lot closer to home. Think about some of the ways in which we seek to control our world, our kingdoms, if you will. We don't have maybe political realms to rule over, but we have places like work. We have places like our own homes that oftentimes control and power are the things that we gravitate towards. I think sometimes of the workplace. It's a place of advancement, right? I need to make a little more money. I need to get a little higher up. If I have to call in some favors, if I have to step on a couple people while I climb the ladder, that's okay. Because then I'll be in control, then I will be satisfied. Or perhaps even in our homes. How can I use the people in my homes to my own end? Here are at least three or four people that have to listen to me no matter what. How can I use that to my advantages? And this is the issue. Fear and terror then come in when our kingdom, when Herod's kingdom, butts up against Christmas. Comes up against this new kingdom and this new king. And we do the same thing Herod does. We dig in deeper. We harden ourselves a little bit more. We steel ourselves up to push on. But that's the thing with Christmas, is eventually one of those kingdoms has to yield. One of those powers has to give in or has, as Herod learned, has to die. And yet the challenging kingdom here is a child, right? Is a baby, is a new king that has come as a baby in humility. The second reaction, then, that we see, if the first is fear and terror, is one of apathy. Take a look at verse 4. After Herod hears all of this and his heart is troubled, he assembles the chief priests and the scribes of the people and inquires of them where the Christ was to be born. So he tells some of his wisest, his advisors, some of these guys who know the Old Testament. They know the scriptures. They know the law. They're at the head of religious life in Jerusalem. And they told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, 'And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel.'" A little bit. Who are these wise men? Who are these chief priests and scribes? These are kind of, as I said, they're kind of that educated, upper level, influential religious leaders, philosophical leaders of the day. Herod, of course, has some of them in close to him, people he can go to be a go between, to explain things to him sometimes when he needs things explained. And so Herod comes before these guys. He assembles them together and says, "Hey, look, I've heard about a new king. What do you know? Is there something that you can tell me, this new king of the Jews?" And immediately they go back, open up their scrolls, perhaps, to Micah. The quotation we have is mostly from Micah 5. The end of it is from 2 Samuel 5, kind of brought together. And they go back and say, right away, we know who this guy is, right? Micah tells us, a new king, a new shepherd, is going to be born in Bethlehem. That's where he is. That's what the scriptures teach us. And then they kind of, it's like they've done their duty. They leave. Maybe it's time for lunch. Maybe, you know, they had some other things going on in the temple that day. But they provide Herod with his answer, and they're gone. They walk off the scene. Let's stop to think about their reaction for just a second. I said it's one of apathy. Herod comes to them and says, "Who is this new king?" And they point back to the scriptures, back to the Old Testament, to all of these prophecies about the coming Messiah, about the king that they as a nation have been expectantly waiting for thousands of years to arrive and to set things right, to change the world as they know it. And they give the answer to Herod, and then they walk off the scene. They don't say, like, "Hey, where are these magi?" Or, like, "Let me go with them. Let me find this new king." But it's almost as if they don't care. It's almost as if their knowledge hasn't gone on to anything else or anything deeper. It hasn't settled into them. What they have supposedly been waiting for, and they just kind of move on with life. Bethlehem was only about 6 miles from Jerusalem. So I Google mapped it for you. So if we left Mount Royal Academy and got all the way to Mount Sunapee and then hiked up Mount Sunapee, you're right about 6 miles. So that, I mean, it's a walk, right? They didn't have cars. They weren't going to drive and cross-country ski up a mountain or anything. But you'd think for the Messiah that they had been waiting for as a nation for years and years and years, that a 6 mile walk would have been worth it, at least to check it out, see what is going on. And to think of this as kind of ups it, maybe even a little bit past apathy, but at the moment they seem very apathetic. But if you turn to the end of Matthew and you start reading through the passion narrative, it's the same people, the chief priests and the scribes. The chief priests are there in the garden arresting Jesus. The scribes are there at his trial questioning him and seeking his death. Their apathy eventually leads them to turn against the new king. Perhaps they were worried about what Herod would do to them. I don't blame them. Perhaps they had other things going on. Perhaps they weren't really expecting this to be the true Messiah. But it seems that they have the knowledge, but yet it doesn't settle into their hearts. They don't act upon it. And I think we too can be similar. Just as we can be similar to Herod, we can be similar to the chief priests and the scribes when we see Christmas, right? We can go through, we know the story, right? Oh yeah, there's all these prophecies, and then this angel came, and somehow this virgin girl became pregnant, and there were angels and shepherds, and he was born after they had to take a long ride to be taxed out by the manger and all the animals. And we enjoy that, and we set up a nativity scene, and we think that's like a great story. but it seems to not, after like December 25, maybe 26, 27, it seems to not really settle into our hearts and change anything and to carry with us. And we go along, kind of like the chief priests and the scribes. We go along with what's happening. We go along with the cultural tide, right? Put up our tree, put on the good music, give our gifts, find a really ugly sweater from the thrift store, cover up our Advent calendars, eat a good meal, and then we kind of go home. And then we wake up, and if it's Saturday, we put on the football game. If it's Monday or Tuesday, we go back to work. And we're done. Christmas is done for 11 more months. The question here is, maybe we know Christmas too well. Maybe the story has just become too familiar. Are we responding to Christmas with apathy? Does it just not matter to us? We remain kind of unchanged and unfazed. Which leads us to our last reaction. Christmas strikes fear and terror into the heart of Herod. It kind of brings about apathy in the rulers and the intelligentsia of the time. But then we see the picture of the wise men. These men, as we read in the beginning of our passage, that had come to Jerusalem looking for this new king of the Jews, looking for the one who was, I would probably think in their minds, going to take over Herod's throne. Verse 7, we pick the story back up. And Herod summoned the wise men secretly, ascertained from them when the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. They fell down and worshipped him. And opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. These wise men have come. We don't know a lot about the wise men, the magi, if you will. It seems that they probably came from Persia, from that kind of area. They traveled. And the most we can gather, these magi were kind of a mix of like an astrologer, an astronomer, which doesn't carry a lot of weight in our day, but would have been a normal thing to have these people looking for signs in the sky, judging what was going to happen based on the alignments of the stars. And they come, they've seen something. They've seen a star in the heavens, something that has signaled to them that there's a new ruler. Something's taking place over there in Jerusalem. Something's taking place in that country yonder. We also ask a lot of questions about this passage. What was the star is a common question. Like, what was this? And people have come up with all kinds of ideas. A lot of people have thought that maybe it's a comet. As far as people have looked into this, they've yet to find a comet that would have kind of been in the sky around there at that time. Some people have suggested there was this alignment of Jupiter and Saturn, which kind of symbolized in their culture rulership, kingship. So maybe that could have said something. Perhaps it was a supernova. Some people have actually said that maybe it was an angel. A lot of times in ancient literature, angels are symbolized or are represented by stars. Maybe it was just a star. Maybe it wasn't. I mean this in all sincerity. Maybe it was a Christmas miracle, right? Maybe we don't know what it is for a reason. But the bigger question for our purposes this morning is what was the reaction of the Magi? Did they, like Herod, see this sign, find this revelation, and just kind of, did it strike fear into the kingdom that they had built, into the kingdom of their lives? Obviously, they weren't being apathetic. They're journeying across lands and miles to see what's going on. And they come to Jerusalem, the capital city, the natural place to look for a new king. And then Herod sends them on their way to Bethlehem in this guiding light, this, you know, first century navigational system brings them right to where Jesus is. And if you look down at verse 10, it's worth reading again. Look at what is their reaction. How do the wise men react to Christmas? When they saw the star, they rejoiced. It's not even that they're just rejoicing. They're rejoicing exceedingly with great joy. Right? Like joy, 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 joy. They're exceedingly great joy. A lot of people have kind of said that these guys have simply come kind of as like a political maneuver. They've heard there's a new king. They're coming to kind of say, hey, what's up? Here's some like gold. Maybe in the future when you're reigning, you'll remember us. But I have a hard time thinking that that is actually the nature of, if you look in verse 11, their worship. If they come and they are completely overjoyed by what they have found, it seems that their worship has to be something much more than just kind of a political play, kind of running through what would have been the system of the day, right? A new president comes into power in one of our allied countries. We send over some diplomats to give them some presents to make sure we're good. I think there's more going on here. And in fact, if you trace this idea of worship throughout Matthew, it's always connected to deep worship of God the Father and God the Son, with one exception in Matthew 4, and that is when Satan is trying to get Jesus to worship him instead. So there always seems to be a deeper, more religious, in a sense, thing going on here with worship. And if you were to turn and look at Matthew 13:44, it's this one verse, the one verse parable of the hidden treasure. It says the kingdom of God, you could today say Christmas, is like a treasure that is hidden in a field. It says when the man found this buried treasure, he buried it back again. He's covered it up. He got rid of everything else he had so he could buy it. It says that he had joy. It gave him joy to give up everything he had for this treasure. That's the connection that we have between joy and worship in the book of Matthew. And the Magi come and they lay before the Christ child, they lay before Jesus their gifts, right? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I always think it's funny. Some people say Jesus was maybe like up to 2 years old, but no matter how old he was at this time, like, hey, here's a hunk of gold, here's some incense, here's some other smelly stuff, like, go at it, right? He's like probably just gnawing on it or whatever. But if we think about this, what does God really need from us, right? The Magi come with gifts. I mean, that's the natural thing to do, to offer gifts to this new king. I think of the song, In the Bleak Midwinter. It was originally a poem. It concludes with, what can I give him, poor as I am? If I were a shepherd, I'd give him a lamb. If I were a wise man, I'd do my part. What can I give him? I'll give him my heart. And that's ultimately what it comes to, because if Christmas is what we have here, if this new king is indeed the Messiah, the Savior of the world, God himself, if we're giving him gold, if we're giving him incense, if we're giving him, or we're simply laying things back at his feet that are already his, right? But yet we can give of ourselves. We can allow Christmas to actually change us. We can, in a sense, have some control over how we react to this changing time, how we react to this new king. And I think the Magi actually, in this part of their story, put forth the perfect example for this. They came and they sought out the Christ child. They sought out Christmas. And it gave them great joy. Their reaction to Christmas was joy. But it wasn't this joy that was like just some merrymaking, some extra eggnog, and then they kind of went back home like it was good, like, hey, we found the new king. But their joy, verse 11, as we pointed out, led them to worship. And this is actually the same thing. We could read this pattern back into Herod. We can read this pattern back into the chiefs, the scribes, and the priests. Whatever we find our joy from, whatever we're seeking, Herod found his joy in power. Herod found his joy in control. He found his joy in leaving a legacy. And that led him to all of these like twisted, diabolical, crazy things that he did. The more that that joy got entrenched in his heart, the more that he had to do it to make sure he was in control of his kingdom. The chief priests and scribes seem to just kind of be looking out for themselves, right? They want to keep their job safe. They know the answer, but they don't really let it change who they are. But the Magi let the joy seep into their hearts. When Christmas comes, they rejoice and they turn around and they worship. It puts them right before the Christ child. And what do? Then they're sent away and they're told, assumed by God, to go a different way to avoid Herod, because God knows what Herod is truly up to. A lot of people see this, and I agree, as essentially as the good news of Jesus Christ's birth, of Christmas coming, and not even going, in a sense, not even going first to Jerusalem, not even going to the Jewish people who had been longing for it for so long, but then that these guys are then sent back into the rest of the world, having worshipped already at the feet of Christ. That's what Christmas ought to instill in us, is this idea of joy, and joy that leads us to worship, because we know that our kingdom isn't going to last. The things that we've built, when they come up against Jesus' kingdom, one of them is going to give. And I think then the challenge of Christmas is to react with joy and worship and to carry that forth with us. Let's pray. Our Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for this time of celebration of the birth of your Son, and that he deigned to come as a child, to come in humility, to be one of us, that we may have joy, that we may know that something is afoot, that something is changing, and that the world as we know it, this world of unrest and of struggle and of difficulty, is changing and will be changed finally and fully and completely by him. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.